Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Thursday, March 31st, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the website at whyagain.org. And due to the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, if you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also simply click and download the PDF file that contains the actual worksheet process itself. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process or they've given powerful testimonials about how the use of that process has improved their life. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon, which if you tap on it, will let you download a completely free and private app. That app contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments or questions. If you have any of those comments, questions, answers, or testimonials you'd like to share with us, you may call us at 563-999-3581. Or you can email us at jeannie@whyagain.org, whyagain.org. Or you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And when we get those comments or questions or testimonials, we will address them in the show. And if we have time, we will send you an email to let you know what the date was of that show so you can listen in the archives for the response to your comments, questions, answers, or testimonials. So as usual, I'll take a moment to ask if anybody has any comments or questions before we start back into our way of mastery. Yesterday we began reading in Lesson 7, and I'll mention as a spacer to give people a chance to put a hand up that we're having a support group again tonight. It's a Thursday night. Our support groups here run from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. All the information you need about joining that is available on the internet at mindshiftersacademy.org website. And I should mention there's a separate login information page for Thursday's group and a separate for Tuesday's group. And in those groups, we have a discussion, we say hello, get caught up on the week. We usually have an hour of listening to one of our favorite teachers or reviewing one of the Way of Mastery lessons. And then we've got an hour and a half to do, or another hour to do worksheets and processing or testimonials or helping people sort out, perhaps even frame out, reality management worksheets or mind shifters that they would do between group sessions. So please feel free to join us and or pass that information along to somebody you think might benefit. Yesterday when we'd finished at the end of the show, I had read one of my favorite stories from this entire book, which is this titled The Shadow of Fear, and it's about how a tiny little blade of grass in a remote mountain region seemed to be moving just a little bit in the wind, and as it moved, it cast this barely perceptible shadow on a rock. Nobody noticed it, has no effect on the flow of life, has no effect on how the planets spin. It was just this little occurrence. And as we're told in the book, no one in all the heavens noticed it, but it was noticed for the purpose of this story. What's the purpose of the story? The purpose of the story is to say that you are completely safe, completely free. You are given all power under heaven and earth to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. And that is what creates your experience of life in each moment. So you could experience yourself as part of all creation, as having limitless power, as being able to create everything and anything that would give you peace and grace and joy and bliss in every moment. And when you don't do that, it says here, when you resist healing, when you struggle to stand up and speak your truth, this is the only thing that's happened. Right before you resist healing, right before you resist feeling bliss, right before you stand up and speak your truth, you chose to believe that that little shadow was going to rise up and punish you and crush you unless you make yourself small, unless you have an experience of vulnerability. The essence of this lesson is fear, as so many of the other scriptures would tell us, fear is a demon to be cast out. Fear is not something that is part of your true nature. It's part of that intellectual mind. It's part of the malfunctioning of all the trivialities that we've shoved into our intellect. And if we listen to fear, the only thing fear will ever do is help fear run our lives another day. Fear will never direct us towards peace, towards bliss, towards awareness of our union with our Creator, towards a healthy, happy life. Fear will never do any of those things. And then we were asked, yesterday where we left off, we were asked to start thinking about what have we given power to? There are many forms of that shadow that we use to generate fear. There are peers and parents and siblings that we have to please. There are governments to bow down to before. There are mates and children that must come first. Then there are the bills to pay. There are the desires to keep in check and keep in order. There are activities and statements and behaviors that other people do that require at least 7 or 8 hours a day for me to analyze and judge. And then I think, wow, this is a tough life. This is exhausting. But I've got to do it. That's what I've been taught. It's my job to decide who's right and who's wrong and judge other people and beat myself up and beat up somebody else. And what this lesson is telling us is that all of that comes from fear. All of that comes from a false perception that we could be hurt, that something of value could be taken from us, that we are not always connected to our source. The text goes on and says, and you thought it was love that makes the world go round. Trust me, it says, love does not spin and go nowhere. It is love that created you. Love birthed within you as an individual, at least within the dance of time and space. It gave you the power to choose, the power to feel, the power to channel light and love, the power to know that something exists within and as you. That is what love has done. Has fear ever created anything remotely like that? The answer is no. So here's the question. What do you want? Do you want creation or mimicry? Peace or the ability to simply drug yourself with triviality? Imagine this. All power under heaven and earth are flowing through you with every breath so that your consciousness witnesses not what you do as a maker or doer, but that which the divine is doing through you in each moment. And you could choose to step back and marvel at the creativity of love. That very same love that moves the sun and the moon and the stars. That's what's giving you life. That's what's bringing the flow of life around you. And if you choose to step back and just marvel at the flow of life, at the creativity of love itself, that is a delightful pastime. By the way, you've been trained to call the body your body, as if you have some right to possess it. Give the body to your creator. The creator knows how to use it. You do not. When your life is given to being only the presence of love, for no other reason than you want it to be, you will know, because you will be, the truth that sets all things free. Here's another way to say that. The whole of creation is waiting to move through me. And I want to be aware of it. I want my experience, my lived consciousness, to be blissfully absorbed in observing the flow of love through me. And then the text goes on and says, and if there are any cobwebs in the way of that, you will sweep them out of the way. When you are in that quality of being, heaven and earth will move to become your servant, but not until then. After all, when you send a conflicted message and nobody shows up for the dance, so now you know what the shadow is. The shadow is fear. It is false. It is a false perception, projection of danger where there is none. perhaps sometimes you enjoy dancing with it. But here is the great question. Are you going to let the shadow lead, or are you going to lead? You, capital S self, you, awareness of consciousness, you, consciousness itself, being able to watch the flow of life through this thing we call the physical body. The text goes on. The next heading is birthing the mind of Christ. Right. So the first one is in this lesson 7. The entire lesson is titled Birthing the Mind of Christ. And then we just had the title of a section titled The Shadow of Fear and the Story of the Little Blade of Grass. Now there's another segment, again titled Birthing the Mind of Christ. So they're trying to get us to remember to get more and more concrete and specific in our practice of awareness, in this focused mindfulness, to bring our intention back over and over again to our attention, our ability to focus our conscious awareness in each moment, to that which can help us wake up to the fact that there is something far more vast, integrated, useful, sacred, inclusive going on that we can have access to more, much, much more than our intellectual mind. Remembering again and again, my intellect, my thoughts about myself, my egoic mind, whatever you want to call it, my conscious logical mind is a simple little tool. One tiny little slice of one dimension, and there are trillions of dimensions to the life experience that are available. So the text reads, when your life becomes liberated in that, I'm not speaking of perfection as you would know it. When your life becomes that motivation, that attitude, that declaration, and that devotion, then perfection will be witnessed through you. For the true meaning of perfection is miracle-mindedness, where that which saves time occurs. When your life becomes that, when you no longer have any conflicted commitment in your beingness, then you will know exactly what the result of my life was for me, because you will be that. So again, that paragraph reads, when your life becomes liberated, when it becomes that motivation, that attitude, that declaration, and that devotion, where you are going to stay consciously awake and aware in each new present moment of your true nature as the extension of love in form. When you understand that that's all that's really of value, that your only relationship of value in life is your relationship with your Creator. When your life becomes that, and you no longer have any conflicted commitment in your entire consciousness, in your beingness, then you will know exactly what the result of Yeshua's life was for him. Because you will be that same thing, that same presence, that same awareness, that same consciousness, that same completely open conduit for the creative energy to express. The text goes on and says, yes, I know what you're worrying about. Quote, does that mean when I get really close, I'm going to have to go through my final initiation of crucifixion? And if I have to do it, will you promise that they'll at least sterilize the nails? Could I choose the day and the hour? Because I don't like to get up too early, you know. Close quotes. The text reassures us. You already know what crucifixion is all about. You have done it to yourself a million times in ways far worse than a mere nail driven through the hand that creates a little twinge of pain. Hell is nothing more than the state of being rutted or stuck in the process of crucifying one's higher self, one capital S self. This is the attempt to murder and destroy what the Creator has created out of love. This dream of being separated from the Creator is an attack that it can only happen within the fantasy of illusion, because it's only a dream of being separated. And it keeps us stuck or rutted in this process of crucifying ourselves. So the text goes on and says, so stop wasting your energy trying to love God. That will not do it for you. Stop wasting so much energy trying to learn how to love another. That will not do it for you. And for God's sake, please refrain from all attempts to get anyone to believe that you love them. Cut it out. It's silliness. It's based in illusion. It's based in the false belief that you are not the extension of love in itself in form. It's based in the false belief and the false perception that you're separated from anyone or anything. So if I'm going to stop wasting my energy trying to love God, if I'm going to stop wasting my energy trying to learn how to love another, if I'm going to stop, for God's sake, refrain from all attempts to get anyone to believe that I love them, what am I going to do? The next paragraph says, put the whole of your attention on giving up the patterns of belief from which you have attempted to crucify the higher S self, capital S self, that God made and placed within you as your very awareness of your existence. Learn to love and have love, have affection for, have commitment to, have honoring of that capital S self beyond all created things. Your true nature is the miracle of life expressing in form. Learn to nurture that higher S self. Learn to cultivate within that self only that which speaks of joy and truth, so that your words and your actions and your very presence always uplifts another. So that when another walks into the room in which you are sitting or standing or moving, they feel like a breath of fresh air just hit them, even if you have not lifted a finger. So these last two paragraphs, we're going to go at this again and again. Please stop. There are very few things that this teaching tells you to do so directly. Stop wasting your energy trying to love God. We had a question from someone in the first lesson or two, you know, where they talked about seriousness. Don't let seriousness enter the mind. And one of our callers said, wait a minute, aren't we supposed to be seriously devoted to loving and being loved and being like God? And this is saying directly, no, you're not supposed to be serious about that. Play with it. Hold the intention. Watch the flow of life. When you get off track, bring your awareness back gently, lovingly, playfully. Comfort yourself and say, oh, I got distracted and spent a week or a month or three decades in anger and rage and fear. Oh, but now I recognize the truth. And so on with life. On with the fullness of life in love and creation. On with the extension of love in each moment. No beating myself up. no attacking somebody else, no spending a lot of energy trying to love God or trying to be like God or trying to be like Yeshua. None of that. It doesn't work. What works? Identifying everything within me that's less than that, all of the false perceptions, all the traumatic energies, all the negative beliefs, and just see through them gently, lovingly, playfully, with love, acceptance, embracing the truth of life. You are a miracle of creation expressing in form. If you're going to get there, you have to stop all this other stuff. What stuff? Stop wasting your energy trying to love God. Stop wasting so much energy trying to learn how to love another person, how to love yourself. Stop that. For God's sake, please refrain from all the attempts you make to get other people to believe you love them. Instead, put the whole of your attention on giving up the patterns of belief from which you have attempted to crucify yourself. That higher self, that true nature, that awake awareness that your Creator made and placed within you as your very awareness, as the very awareness of your existence, as your consciousness. Put your attention on giving up any negative pattern of belief, any traumatic energy, any perception you've assembled, which gives you a evidence that you are in danger and that you can be hurt and that you need somebody else's love to survive. Give it up. Learn to love. Learn to be attached to. Learn to be identified with, understanding the truth of your true self, higher self, and appreciate that and honor that beyond all created things. Learn to nurture that self. Learn to cultivate within that self only that which speaks of joy and truth. Learn what it means to teach only love by being only aware of your true nature as love and extending that awareness in every interaction with everyone and everything. When you do this, your words and your actions and your very presence always uplifts another. You will feel uplifted. Others will feel uplifted just being in your presence. The text goes on at the bottom of page 89 and says, as long as there is a trace of energy within you in which you are striving to get from any perceived thing or object around you, what you are sure you lack inside of yourself, as long as that's happening, you cannot know the love of self, the truth of yourself as that love, the extension of the creative energy flowing through you. You can't know it. You can't experience it. You can't help that be your experience because you're focused on something else and you're creating an experience of contraction, an experience of judgment, whether it's of yourself or others, an experience of littleness. And when that happens, you cannot experience freedom. Happiness is an inside job. It's 100% always and everywhere an inside job. Top of page 90 it says, so then what happens? You finally get it right. And you decide, quote, all right, what's that little shadow been doing? Well, let's take care of that one, and then that one, and then that one. This negative thought, that false perception, that judgment of another, that trauma from the past that keeps getting resonated. I'll do my EFT tapping and breathing and worksheets. Michael Rice canceling the goal worksheets. I'll ask to be shown. I'll do some journaling to stir up what I might need to see with the mind shifter tool, and I will become consciously aware more and more as I do my work of all of the places in my mind where fear has made a home. And I will lovingly embrace those things as completely self-created. And I will laugh and sing and dance as I realize, as I move into the conscious realization that all of that is false and none of that was ever true. The book asks, how many blades of grass and how many shadows are there within the being that seem to be overlaid upon the true self? How many? Am I going to have to do this a million times? How many worksheets am I going to have to do? How many forgiveness process? Does it matter? Why would it matter? I'm in the process of birthing my awareness that my true nature is the Christ mind. I'm getting to be more aware of everything that blocks me from having this blissful consciousness as the true rooted nature of my being. The text goes on to say, so what happens when that really occurs? First, and listen well, because this conscious logical mind doesn't want to hear this, so it tells us, listen well, nothing will be unacceptable to you. They're not kidding. It's not hyperbole. It's not exaggeration to say every judgment is the opposite of love, is the opposite of the process of forgiveness. It takes me to the opposite side of the universe from where I say I want to be. When I give up judgment in all its forms, the contraction away from the flow of life, the insistence on being right, the insistence on putting my intellectual mind as my God at the head of the class, driving the bus, when I give that up and I ask to be shown, nothing will be unacceptable. It's all part of the flow of life. And in order to transcend it, I first have to trust it, embrace it, allow it, surrender to it, and that's the only way to transcend it. So the next paragraph addresses this. The conscious logical mind, the Western mind especially, will say, wait a minute, I resist. Does that mean if somebody is not a vegetarian that they're still loved? They're still a good person? Does that mean if somebody votes for somebody that I'm sure is the wrong person, that they're not insane? You think I could actually love them? Does that mean that someone who seeks power and therefore creates a war and kills 5,000 or 500,000 men and women and children, that I can still look upon them and not have my love disturbed? Does it mean that whatever arises within this temporary world is really, truly, literally not a problem any longer? That nothing is unacceptable? The answer is yes. Period. Full stop. Yes. It does not mean that you condone it. It means you don't resist it. It's no longer unacceptable. For the truth of the matter is that whatever you cannot accept, you will judge. And every judgment is the attempt to murder what you have decided has no right to be. It reminds me of the line from the Course in Miracles where it says, perception was made as an attack on God. And what happened to me when I first read that line in Course in Miracles, when I first heard that talked about, it was like a smack in the face. I couldn't comprehend it. It seemed like one of those silliness. And yet, if you understand that all of these are just words trying to point at an experience, at things that go way beyond words. So what does God mean? It's life, it's love, it's creation, it's energy, it's all of creation, it's all energy. It's all forms of love, it's all forms of thought, it's existence itself. It's not a person, it's not an entity sitting off in a cloud someplace. God, light, love, life, energy, all of it's the various words for the same thing. Our perception, these pictures that our minds make up, based on the tiny little bits of energy that come through our five senses, those things were never intended to replace our direct experience of life. It was just supposed to be this tiny little bit of information used in a much grander way of breathing and feeling at different levels and experiencing with maybe all 12 cranial nerves firing fully in my conscious awareness, not just the five that are related to the physical senses. So my perception, the pictures my mind shows me, in this Western culture, we have elevated that to the level of truth and master. We think that I know what you said and I heard it and I know what this means. And that's an attack on life, on the flow of life, on creation itself, on God, because there's so much more going on in every moment than our physical senses and our perceptual processes based on those five senses can keep track of or can understand or can integrate or can relate to. So every time we judge something as bad or wrong or unacceptable, we put ourselves in our own dreamlike experience, we put ourselves in this state of separation. I'm using that I'm the master carpenter, and all of a sudden, instead of using my higher awareness about how to work with this wood and go with the grain and which tools would be good for the sanding and the routing and the grinding and the finishing and the carving, instead of having that higher wisdom about dozens of tools that might be used at different ways and different times, I just ask the hammer every time, what should we do here? And the hammer says, well, hit it. There's a thing, and then I hit things, and that's what I do, and I just keep hammering everything. That's what judgment is. It's this hammering at I'm right and the world is wrong. I really like how they come back and they say, listen, right away, yes, everything is acceptable. And that does not mean you condone it. It simply means you stop pulling yourself out of direct relationship to it. You stop creating the false belief that you are separate from the flow of life, that you know better than the flow of life, that your particular perception, which has just generated all of this tightness and tension and negative emotion in you, it's the right one. You stop that process. You learn to recognize that the tightness and the tension and the negative emotional states you experience are best used as the alarm system to awaken you to the fact that you just bought into the dream of separation, that you have pulled yourself out of the flow of life, that you're living in the dream. That you're pretending the dream is true. That you pretend that your brothers and sisters are not remaining as they were created to be, that they are not part of the flow of life with you. You've created this perception of separation, and now without the awareness of how best to use the tension and the negative emotions, you're just perpetuating the illusion. The last paragraph I read says, yes, everything is acceptable. It does not mean you condone it. It means it is no longer unacceptable. For whatever you cannot accept, you will judge. And every judgment is the attempt to murder what you have decided has no right to be. The next paragraph says, judgment is the opposite of forgiveness. It lives on the side of the fence with fear. Forgiveness lives on the side of the fence with love. Only love can heal this world. Imagine then living in a state of being in which literally everything, correction, literally nothing was unacceptable to you. Everything is acceptable to you because you know that the source of your true being was far beyond the limitations of anything created in time and space. That not even death, which has been created out of the contraction known as fear, not even death is unacceptable. Even death is acceptable to you. I say unto you, if you will choose to trust me, I will show you the way to peace. I will wait for your reply, as I can do nothing to take from you the freedom required to become wholly committed to allowing Christ to be birthed where once a useless illusion reigned. I will show you how to become the being out of which all creation is arising, so that you will know the truth that sets you free. I will show you how to become conscious of the fact that you are the being out of which all creation is arising, so that you will know the truth that sets you free. Now, this will raise up in you the most fundamental of fears possible. What is that? This is the last fear to be overcome, the fear of death. For when you are confronted with the truth, capital T truth, you know that everything you have sought to create as a substitute for that truth must fall away, must die. That is why I said, quote, the last to be overcome shall be death, close quotes. Truly meaning fear of death. Death is allowed so that the Christ mind might live. Understand well, there is no one, and there shall not at time and any time be anyone who reads these words to whom I have not given this promise unto. Quote, I will show you the way to the truth that is true always and sets you free. But only you can make the decision to bring the whole of your being to that journey. And all it requires is that you call what you call in your language a smidgen of willingness. A smidgen of willingness is all it takes. I know the way home because I have completed the journey. And I will show you the way. This is near the top of page 91. This is Yeshua saying, I know the way home because I have completed the journey, and I will show you the way. Now, in my book, the next sentence is underlined in orange, and orange marker in the margins. Quote, with every word that I utter, my one intention is to reveal to you the place within you that is the presence of love that you seek. With every word I utter, my one intent is to reveal to you the place within you that is the very presence of love that you seek. And there's that line from Francis of Assisi. What you're looking for is what is looking. You are the love that you seek. It is within you. It is your essence. The next paragraph reads, what if you chose to actually commit yourself to considering what I'm sharing and return to the innocence of a child as you contemplated what it would mean in your life? Rest assured, when the journey to the kingdom is completed, the journey within it begins anew. The bliss, the wisdom, the creativity, the laughter, the friendships, the family, the joy, the serenity, and the peace that have been, for the most part, seen as impossible, as an impossible dream, all of these will become your most ordinary state of being. And yet, none of it can occur through any power that can move through me, Yeshua, or anyone outside of you. The next paragraph says, I can guide you. I can show you the way. I can walk beside you on the way that you have chosen. At times, I can give you my strength until yours is as certain as mine. I can do that by carrying you. And ultimately, you must demand that I put you down so that your feet touch the soil of the kingdom of heaven and you walk under your strength and your certainty beside me. You must choose to know the truth of life. You must choose to put aside every judgment as it arises within you. You must choose to observe what is the energetic shift in you each and every time a judgment is chosen. And you must choose to put it down. You must choose to see it as false. You must choose for love present moment. The next paragraph says, you will indeed find in that day and hour that as often as you ask it of me, I will ask of you, quote, how do you think we could do this? What would you like to create with me? Close quotes. And then, indeed, we are as brother and brother, sister and brother, friends, dancing and playing in the kingdom that was prepared for us by the Creator. One little shadow cast by a tiny blade of grass is all that seems to prevent you from coming wholly and completely to where I am. If you tarry yet a little while longer, it is all right. You cannot prevent me from knowing the truth about you and having great love for you, extending my love to you, seeing the love in you, seeing your true nature. When you are in this energy of love, when you are so immersed in simply being conscious of that loving energy as your true nature, is it not true that you have no sense of time at all? There is no sense of any effect disturbing your peace. You are just swaying to the music, so to speak. You're loving, and your wholeness grows even more holy. I remember once in the support group, we're reading through this and we're doing the darshan on this lesson. And I had a sidebar where I just talked about, during this next week, look for those times in your life where you seem to lose track of time. Not because you're stuck on some video game, but when you're doing something that's in the creative flow, when either you're meditating or if you love to sew, you're sewing, or if you love to birdwatch, you're birdwatching, and you're in the zone and time seems completely irrelevant. And then an exercise from this work would be, actively, consciously choose to spend just a little bit more of your time each day doing those kinds of things. Connecting in that timeless space with your true nature. The last paragraph on page 91 reads, "Therefore, love one another as I have loved you. For the Father has first loved me, that I might show you the truth of what love is and the reality of your being. I will not cease in doing this, regardless of how long you choose to tarry, for love is indeed patient and kind. Love sees clearly. It is not deluded. Love does not allow delusion. It sees everything accurately, 100% clarity. Love embraces all things, trusts all things, and allows all things. Love knows perfectly well where it is going and never ceases in that journey until every blade of grass is released from casting shadows and the whole of creation is returned to the heart of the Creator. Learn to love yourself and cry out to this world, quote, I and my Father are one. That is the soil from which I move and live and have my being. So be it, close quotes. Always remember that the Father looked upon his holy creation and said, behold, it is very good. That goodness has a name. It's yours. You are that goodness. Your essence is whole, complete, perfect, undefiled, from the moment of creation, in each present moment, on through eternity. That light that was created by the Creator, which is expressing through you, that light deserves to shine. The doorway stands before you. The question is, will you open it now or will you open it later? For what you experience will reveal to you what choice you've made this day. So if you're experiencing sadness, tension, grief, upset, judgment, bitterness, hurt, lack, that's awakening positions, experiences that can awaken you to what you have chosen, consciously or unconsciously, in this dimension or another, in your bloodline, whether you understood it or not. And you can choose again. You can choose anew. You can choose to learn to interpret every tension, every negative emotion, every contraction and constriction away from life as the alarm system that's there for you to wake you up to the fact that, oh, you've just stepped in an open manhole again. You've just chosen for separation as a dream state rather than awake, aware, present moment consciousness. The last paragraph on page 92, the last paragraph of this lesson 7 reads, beloved and holy friends, may peace be with you always. And may the capital T truth that is true always shine within your hearts and minds throughout all the ages. Remember, there is a perfectly good reason why I keep saying time and again, quote, I am with you always, close quotes. Amen. And so it is. This truth of your existence is available for you to begin tuning into. And the alarm system, the guidance system that each and every one of us has been given is our emotional energy system. We've been given a false template for that. We've been taught by our families and our cultures to misinterpret the value and the meaning and the cause of those energies that we call emotions. It's a text like this and the other great, deep spiritual teachings that are here to introduce us to a new possibility, that each and every energy that we experience is not being presented to us as a punishment. It is being presented to us as a gift. It is being presented to us as part of the alarm system, the guidance system. As it said in A Course of Love, it said, you know, that this clearly, your emotional energy system is your guidance system. So if you're feeling loving, if you're feeling peaceful, if you're feeling grounded, centered, contented, blissful, you're probably headed in the right direction with your thoughts, words, and actions. If you're feeling anything less than that, look inside, because you're making an error in the decisions, in the judgments, in the choices, in the focus, in the interpretations of the flow of life, and that's what's creating the negativity you're experiencing. So that takes us through Lesson 7 for the first time. And we've got a minute or two if anybody wants to raise a hand and say hello. Otherwise, I will remind us all that there is a support group tonight, being that it's a Thursday night. And all the information needed for joining us there, it's absolutely free. You can donate if you choose, but it's free. And the information is available on mindshiftersacademy.org. If you go there, please do remember that there is a separate information page for Tuesdays and separate for Thursdays. You cannot use the Tuesday number to join us tonight, but if you have any comments or questions, you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And I thank you all for being here and for listening and for participating in this journey, this study with the Way of Mastery. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are the energy of love and creation extending in form, and everything else is false. And I will welcome Jeannie Rice whenever she chooses to turn on her microphone.
I am here. Thanks.
Are you there, Jeannie Rice?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, awesome. Thanks. I appreciate you.
Blessings. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Thursday, March the 31st, 2022. Man, this month went by fast. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. While we're waiting on Michael to get dialed again, I'll just remind everybody you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and you can click on either the easiest place to find the information for tonight is to go up and either click on Schedule and then Global Online Book Club, or if you scroll down on the homepage, you'll see the listing of events, and you'll see the Global Book Club as one of them. And when you click that, it will give you the information for the club. Michael has been on there twice now. The club is studying forgiveness. They're using the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And last Thursday, Michael went over the forgiveness worksheet. And that link is on the page that I just sent you to as well. So you can go back and listen to him going through step by step of the worksheet that's in the book. And the lady actually had made slides of each step one at a time, and she would put them up on the screen. So those that perhaps didn't have a book right with them could follow along easily. And the next lesson tonight is, or the next class tonight is more questions and answers. It's at 8:30 London time. That's where the book club originated. So that's 3:30 Eastern time. And the club is called Hear My Voice. And she runs it. She's run it for about 4 years. And I think they actually meet on Tuesdays and Thursdays and at different times. But Michael is going to be on there until, who knows, until we're complete. After tonight, he's going to be there the second and the fourth Thursday of every month. And all of that information is on our website, so you can go out there and get the Zoom link and everything else. And I'm hold just one moment. I've got a little girl hollering for me. Just a second. My apologies. She always takes a nap when we're doing the radio show. And before she closed her eyes, she saw a bug on the ceiling. And so I'm going to go in here and get that bug for her. So we would like to hear from you all. If you would press 1, that puts you in queue. And excuse me. Okay, lay down, sweetie. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and I'll announce you by your area code. And if you don't want to give us your real name, you can make up a name, and that's okay. And so I'm still waiting on Michael to get on, and I hope that you all have had a good week. Like I said, this month has just absolutely flown by. It's been so busy for us getting Dad settled and everything, and it just seems like one day just kind of rolls right into the next one. So I don't know where the time has gone. The fourth of the year is already passed. So 563-999-3581 and press 1. There are a few other new things on the website if you haven't been out there in a little while. And also, you know, I'll remind everybody of the app. It changed tremendously back in December. We did a update added. It has 2 different forgiveness wake-up sheets that has the Dragon Klingon game. It has the commitments. You can click a button that will take you to our website for events. And then there's a button that says more, and there's a whole lot of links under that link. And then you can send us a question from any page. So it doesn't matter what page you're on, button on there that says instant ask questions. And so when you ask us a question, it will send me an email, and you're required to put your email address in. And so it will send me an email with your question and your email address. We will read the question on the radio show. Michael will answer it. And then we'll send you back an email with the day and the time that we actually addressed your question. And so, and then after you ask the question, you go straight back to the app and just continue where you were. So if you haven't downloaded that under Google Play Store or the Apple iTunes iStore, I'm not familiar with the Apple phones, but go to your Apple Store. And it's a free download. It's Heartland, all one word, Aramaic Forgiveness. And it'll pop up with kind of a glowing heart. And then once you download it, you'll see mine and Michael's picture in there too. But it's a free app, and it's totally private. So download it. And if you have an old copy that doesn't have all of those things that I just mentioned, then do an update and get the latest version of it. And like I said, then on the website, there are different changes. So, you know, scroll around there and, you know, let us know what you think, if there's something that you would like to see in a different location or easier access or whatever, just drop me a line to Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at Y-Again, W-H-Y-A-D-A-I-N.org. And welcome, Michael.
And thank you, dear heart. Thank you for all the awesome skills that you have to put all of these things together with technology and everything else that goes along with getting these tools available and putting it out into people's hands. So it's pretty awesome. So you are deeply appreciated. And beyond that, why is this happening to me again? Where do we want to go with this? Basically, it's let's look at how do we change the content of the human mind, and why would I want to change the content of my human mind? And I'd offer that the reason you'd want to do that because, well, probably the biggest thing is, and it's something that we've pretty much had hidden from us, is that recognizing that by nature we are creators, then realizing that literally everything that happens in our lives, we create, we structure the realities, and we find ourselves through resonance attracted to the circumstances that we find ourselves in. As you change the content of your mind, as you remove content that doesn't belong there, that has you end up in places that one says, oh, I'd rather not be there, you get to change the whole resonance of your field. You get to live in a different world. And, you know, when you recognize that there are two worlds, there's what people call the world of actuality, you know, the world that people think is that of stuff, which it really isn't. There's no stuff. This is Einstein. He says, on such things as matter, we've been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy. Energy whose vibration has been so lowered just to be perceptible to the senses, there is no matter. We don't live in a material world. We live in an energetic world. And recognizing that in an energetic world, because energy is governed by the law of resonance, we tend to resonate ourselves into spaces that reflect who and what we are. And forgiveness allows for the removal of energies, or the transmutation, maybe more properly said, of energies that never belonged in the human system. And as we choose to face and deal with what does not belong, we literally move those energies out of the system. Keep bringing us back into situations and circumstances that we say, I really don't want to be here. Forgiveness being the tool for doing that. How do you collapse that world of perception? How do you change the content of the mind? Well, that's the whole idea of this awesome first century technology called forgiveness. Once again, nothing to do with letting somebody else off the hook, but rather a tool with which I get to play out what's in my mind. And when I choose to change that, well, then everything changes. And we're here to change everything. Process, to bring forward these ideas and to make these ideas available on a wider and wider scale. Eventually, until they're available to every, literally, every mind, heart, and being on planet Earth. And when I realize that the content of my mind reflects in my physiology, if there are things reflecting in my physiology that I say, well, I really don't want that happening, then I have the opportunity to start to move those things out of my structure, change the content of my mind, change literally the resonance of my whole energy field, and therefore wherever I find myself, things are going to start to shift and change. Behavior always comes out of and is a reflection of the content of one's mind. And if one blames someone else for their behavior, then they're going to tend to hide the root of what drives them from themselves and wonder, why is this happening to me again? Wonder how they find themselves in the same position over and over and over again. After all, it's not my fault. It's not my responsibility. It must be the fault of someone else. We're going to ask you to give that idea up totally and completely and recognize that wherever you are, you're there by law. You're there because of the way this energy system operates. And when you take responsibility of access to parts of your mind that otherwise appear to be hidden, and you get to be able to change them. So that's the essence that we're here to do, the work that we're here to understand. And if we're going to survive, we need to rise above the dynamics of hostility and fear. With awareness and understanding the tools to do so, healing is inevitable. And aberrant behavior moves through humanity because of the energetic dynamics that any individual or group of individuals is engaging in. And once you realize that literally the world between your ears is generated from your own internal content, and you know how to collapse that content, you know how to collapse that, literally collapse that world, which is what forgiveness does, then you have the opportunity to start to do a total restructuring project. So that's what we are here to do. And of course, Jeannie has put together the app, which is just awesome the way that it has developed. And if you haven't used the forgiveness process as yet, one of the easiest ways to do it is just go to your app store and type in Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. Type that in, click install, and you'll be working with the world's only true forgiveness app. And if you start to work with it and you have questions, here's the place to go. Come join us. If you're out there in this listener land, our purpose in doing this call is to be here to support you. So if you have a thought about any aspect of the work that you're not sure about and you'd like some feedback, you know, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, you can call into the show, and by calling, you're listening to the show directly. The call-in number is 563-999-3581. And as you're listening to the show, if you have a question, all you do is push 1, and that will raise a hand in the control panel, and GD will introduce you by your area code. We've been talking about codependence dynamic, codependence to interdependence, and the power person dynamic. And there are 3 conditions that happen in someone's life that instill this power person dynamic within the mind. It's usually between a parent and a child, though not always. And the 3 conditions that install that into a mind are 1, the individual is in the control of someone else. The subject individual, again, is usually a child, and the someone else is usually a parent. And that individual has more control over the subject individual than the, again, usually child has themselves. Secondly, the power person is not functioning as a human being. It's not functioning as love, as we're designed to. And the 3rd thing is that the subject individual perceives the unfolding events as a survival situation. When these 3 conditions are met, the energy field of the child opens wide, and the child simply takes in whatever's happening in the environment. Energetically becomes like a sponge. They open fully and just draw in every energetic dynamic of the environment. And those highly charged emotional energies, which are absorbed in that moment, become the root of behavior in the future. And will tend to control an individual their whole lives long. Once that power person dynamic is installed, there'll be 3 behaviors possible for that individual, literally for the rest of their lives, until they become cognizant of and process through, forgive, remove what doesn't belong. It'll run their whole lives. and which behavior is active in that subject individual at any given moment will always be determined through what's called the automatic decision system. And the behavior that's active in the system will be determined by the level of stress in the mind. So the rest of that individual life is going to be controlled by those power person dynamics. And they're basically, depending on the level of stress, three different possibilities, three different types of behavior that will kick in. When there's little or no particular stress, will, with no conscious thought, be driven to do whatever they did to get along with the power person. When stress starts to build in that individual's life, they'll be driven to do whatever they did to resist and survive with the power person. And then when they become ultra-stressed, they'll do whatever the power person did that they hated the most. And few have the ability to refuse to follow the behavior prompts from the mind in that circumstance. So again, in that circumstance, when ultra-stressed, the individual will do whatever their power person did to them that they hated the most. We talked yesterday, I'm not sure whether I read the piece from Will Smith that he'd written. I think we did talk about that. If you're thinking, you know, there's so much conversation. I was shocked when I looked on the internet this morning at how much conversation there is about the Oscars from the other night. But Will Smith did some writing some time ago in his memoirs where he described exactly the behavior that he did at the Oscars that night. If you were watching, as Chris Rock told his joke, quote-unquote joke, we might want to reconsider in our culture what joking really is. But when he told that joke, Will Smith was laughing till he caught his wife's eye, and she wasn't. Now, my offering would be that whatever the look was that she gave him, and it was the look, if you were watching, it resonated. It activated a different goal in him than the goal that, you know, I would expect someone who's there to perhaps win an Oscar, is there to have a good time for the evening. And it looked like he was. He was laughing away until that look from his wife. And what it appeared, at least to me, was that she wasn't very happy. It resonated as a goal in Will Smith's mind. And the way that stress is created is by setting goals or resonating, activating a goal that's there from the past. So I think we could easily see the moment where a different goal was resonated than to just be there having a good time. And he gets up and becomes pretty brutal physically and verbally with Chris Rock. And he did exactly what his power person did that he hated the most. From his memoir, written, of course, sometime before. I'm not even sure when he wrote this memoir. But he wrote how he watched his father hit his mother in the head. And how much of an impact that it had on his life. So here he is, 45 or so years later. And he replicates the behavior his power person did that was so painful for him 45 years earlier. He literally replicates it to the T. And interesting that there was some language that went with it. I bet if we could have gone back 45 years earlier when Will Smith was 9, that incident that he wrote about, I bet the language that he used toward Chris Rock, I bet that hostility-based language, I'll bet that was verbatim exactly the words that were being used by his father in that event where Will Smith said he was so impacted. And these dynamics tend to move from generation to generation to generation. You know, you look at that story of the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years, and you ask yourself the question, or at least I would invite everybody to ask yourself the question, can a group of people who obviously are very well acquainted with astronomy get lost in a 35-square-mile area for 40 years? That's just silly. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous. It wasn't about being lost in a hot, sandy place. The desert there is a code word for the unconscious. Someone whose life is being run by the unconscious, one would say they are lost in the desert. And if you go back and you read that passage in the scriptures, they tell us exactly what needed to happen for him to get out of the desert. What did they say had to occur? They said the old generation had to die off. Now, that doesn't mean everybody in all physical bodies had to physically die. The root of the word generation is genari. It means cause. All of the old causes held in the mind from the previous generations had to be removed from the mind. Elsewise, it would run the mind. The difference between being in the desert, replicating past power person dynamics, and what they called the promised land, which I would offer is the land of conscious co-creation. What had to happen, the old generation, the old causes held in the mind right down to the very word patterns, had to be brought forward in the presence of active love and transmuted, released, forgiven. Until that's done, as sure as night follows day, I was talking to someone this morning and talking about this event, and here's what you can do with absolute surety. If you watch someone under a high level of stress and watch what they do, you can predict that they had that done to them in childhood. Just as night follows day. I mean, I was kind of surprised after I, you know, heard about the incident, watched the video of the incident, and then someone had posted from his memoir a description of the incident, and it happened to Will Smith decades before. And that's how things get passed from generation to generation. You look at that idea in the ancient scriptures, and they said, look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. Most people are simply playing out the energetic dynamics of the generations, and once that energetic dynamic becomes established in trauma, it will tend to be passed from generation to generation to generation. What we're looking to do is to support people metaphorically stepping into the promised land, the place where they can consciously, purposely engage in an energy, originate an energy that perhaps has never been seen in their bloodline. And as they do, bring a different behavior into their lives. So that's what we're here to support. Support looking at whatever does not belong and then encourage people to step into the place where they forgive continuously. And I don't mean that they're continuously letting somebody else off the hook, the Greek idea of forgiveness, but rather that they're continuously, whenever there's any form of pain or turmoil or upset, applying the forgiveness process to remove. There needs to be a paradigm shift around forgiveness. A complete change of mind about forgiveness has to occur if one is ever going to engage in actual forgiveness. So forgive continuously, but never forgive anyone for anything. Never forgive yourself for anything. New paradigm. when you access the Aramaic forgiveness process. And if you haven't used it, if you're not using it, we invite you to go to our website, whyagain.org. You can engage in and do the worksheet process right there. If you want a copy of our book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Unfortunately, it's out of print, but you can go to Amazon, you can go to eBay and find used copies of it for usually $3 or $4. So you can get a physical copy of the book, though it's out of print. Thank goodness we put enough copies out there around the turn of the century that they're still around 25 years later. People are still selling used copies. Or you can go to whyagain.org, whyagain.org, and if you scroll down the page, you'll see a picture of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Click on it and drill down and follow the links, and you'll be able to download a free copy of it. And or you could do the forgiveness worksheet process, a step-by-step. Here's how you fill in the blanks to train your mind to engage in forgiveness. Here's how you do that. And you can do it right there on the website live, or you can print the worksheets off, process yourself at home, and or, as we said earlier, you can download the app in your app store. Just type in Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, all one word, Heartland, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. When you look at that, when you type that in, you'll be looking at, although in some cases it kind of turns the words around, but if you type those words in, it'll come up. Click the link, download the app, and start filling in the blanks. Jeannie has put two different versions of the worksheet in, the simpler one that she uses in her women's healing women's intensive, and the long form that it gets into a more detailed process. If you have questions about that, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Call us. Ask your questions. And or if you would like to participate in the radio show, or pardon me, in the study group that is happening in, let's see, it's now 1:26, so about 2 hours. You can simply join us on that Zoom session, which I assume Jeannie has in the archives at this point, or the notes on the radio show. And or I'm just looking now, give me 1 second, and we'll give you the call-in number for the Zoom call. And the call-in, or pardon me, not call-in number, but the meeting ID. So if you open the Zoom app on your phone, right, on the website, but you can put in the meeting ID. Once you've opened the Zoom app on your phone or your computer, the meeting ID is 974-444-2565. So just put that meeting ID in, and then the passcode's 54321. It was nice. They made that simple. So meeting ID in the Zoom app, 974-444-2565. Passcode 54321. Put that in, and you are part of listening to the Q&A session. That's what we're doing today. We did the worksheet last week. And so if you listen to the Q&A session, you will be able to ask questions through Zoom and or just listen to the conversation with people from all over the world. Last time we had some interesting, last couple of shows where study groups we've done with them have been quite interesting. Interesting group of folks. So thank you, Yinka, a young lady from London, England, who put that together and has made a commitment to just support us in getting the forgiveness process out there on a wider and wider scale all the time. So if you're out there in listener land, How can we support you? What's on your mind?
We do have a hand up.
Go ahead,
and if somebody would drop me a text, it may be my phone because I had to dial back in, but there's like a buzz that's going on behind you as you're talking. So I'll go ahead and turn on the caller. It's 828. I believe this is Miss Magda.
Hello. It is indeed Miss Magda. I do not hear a buzz.
Hey there.
I'm not hearing a buzz, just to let you know what's happening with my phone. I don't have very long.
Okay, good.
I can listen today, but I don't have very long to talk. So I just wanted to add a little something that you may have already addressed in regard to the incident at the Oscars between Will Smith and Chris Rock.
I
believe you were talking about that earlier. And you're talking about the power person dynamic. And I understand that Will Smith was traumatized by something that his father did to his mom. And so it had to do with him playing out his power person in his time of big stress. Chris Rock, however, I heard later or read or something that he also had some traumatic situations in his family. And I think it was that his father was the person who struck out. And I don't know if it was him or a different family member. But the neat thing that I also heard about Chris Rock is that he processed through that stuff in therapy. And I think that's a brilliant example why he was able to stay in a non-violent reaction, even though he was struck by Will Smith.
Yeah, I thought he was phenomenal that instead of going into disturbance, upset, emotional trauma, I mean, obviously he's done some work and he's a professional, you know, entertainer, comedian. But yeah, I thought for the kind of attack that took place and then the verbal assault that took place afterward perhaps was even worse than the physical in terms of, I mean, here's the elite of Hollywood and how many, you know, millions of people around the world listening, and the verbal assault was pretty intense, and Chris Rock made a joke of it and went on, you know, just moved forward. I thought he was amazing. Pretty rare to have that kind of composure in that sort of situation. I don't know anything about Chris Rock's history, so it's nice to have some of that information.
Yeah, I wish I had more specifics. At this moment, I'm not recalling what it was that happened in his family, but it seemed when I heard it that it very much paralleled what Will Smith had gone through. I think it was a mother-father interaction, or maybe many interactions. And I think that shows the value of doing our work and dealing with those demons that come in the form of our power person dynamic. And so I just wanted to give you that info. It's a great example.
Awesome. Thank you. I wasn't aware of that. So, and you know, if you go back to our healing through relationships, it's just another verification of the way it works, matching bags of garbage. And we tend to pull those energetic patterns out on each other. And, of course, it's everybody's opportunity to learn forgiveness.
Yeah, absolutely. I hadn't thought about that, but that is so true. Well, I'm gonna let go of and listen to the rest of the call. Thank you for your show, of course, and your wonderful tools. Bless you both.
Appreciate you. Blessings. And, of course, in just 2 hours today and then the second and fourth Thursday of every month from until further notice, we'll be doing the study session with the Hear My Voice book study out of London, England. So come and join us and be part of the process. And it is now, we've got about 25 minutes left. So Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody else out there in the phone queue with a hand up? Anything else happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. No hands up. So somebody press one. We've got plenty of time to go through another conversation.
So if you're out there in listener land, how can we support you? What's on your mind? 563-999-3581. It's a pretty hot topic on the table with what happened at the Oscars the other night. I find it interesting. Actually, I did quite a bit of research after the show last night, and if you aren't familiar with it, there is an interesting video. If you go into YouTube and type in Sasheen, S-A-S-H-E-E-N, Little Feather, and Marlon Brando, and the word Oscars, you'll find a very interesting video link. There's actually a short one that's only about 2 minutes, and then there's about an eight-minute one. Click on the eight-minute one, because it involves two different pieces of information. During the Oscars in 1973, Marlon Brando won the Best Actor Award for his part in The Godfather. And that occurred, if I remember correctly, something like about a month after the incident at Wounded Knee. And Marlon Brando refused to accept the award. In fact, he decided that he could be more useful by going to Wounded Knee and supporting integrity in the way that the state government treated the Native Americans at Wounded Knee. And he asked Sasheen Littlefeather to deliver his refusal speech. Interestingly enough, they wouldn't let her do it. It was about an eight-minute speech. They gave her 1 minute, and apparently from one article that I read, they told her that if she went over 1 minute, that they'd arrest her. So she had 1 minute. She very eloquently, very sweetly, very respectfully, in a very abbreviated way, expressed Marlon Brando's thought, and that was that it was more important for him to be at Wounded Knee doing something about the Native American abuse in America, and that he supported her in making the request that Native Americans be represented as actual human beings in films, series, and in replays, and that the Academy and Hollywood in general stop portraying the Native Americans the way that they were portrayed. And I found it interesting. It's very much like the situation today with all of this MAGA stuff going on, or we might say MAWA, M-A-W-A. They're the initials I've been using, Make America White Again. And as this young woman spoke, and again, very sweetly and very respectfully spoke, a small but loud vocal number of people booed her, and the majority broke out into applause for her, which I thought was, you know, rather typical and awesome. There is a small vocal minority that's willing to lie, cheat, steal, do whatever they need to do in order to keep this racist baiting and conflict going. And here's a young lady who simply respectfully said, please, you know, take care of my people. And then if you Google Marlon Brando and Oscars 1973, you'll find another one where he's talking with, if I remember correctly, it's about a 5 or 6 minute session segment. This is all on my Facebook page, where he's talking with, if I remember correctly, with Jack Parr. And Jack Parr says, would you do that any differently? He says, no. And he goes through and explains, and he particularly focuses on very compassionate and gentle speaker and addressed the way that especially children are damaged by being portrayed the way that they are being portrayed. And in that conversation, Marlon Brando did not limit his comments to Native Americans, but spoke of the way that Hollywood has portrayed most nations other than white in a derogatory way. I mean, very eloquently, although responsibly and with a great deal of compassion, speaks about how that needs to change and how we each need to do something about it. And then if you Google Marlon Brando and Johnny Carson, you'll find another, I think it's about a 10-minute clip. And this goes back, so this Academy Awards event that happened, and, you know, as I said, a small but very vocal minority booed her. It apparently took 6 security guards to hold back John Wayne from going up on the stage and tearing her off the stage and attacking her, which I found appalling. And that, now his name's not coming to me. Anyway, one other Hollywood Western actor made a comment when he was giving an award to someone about how he was giving the award for all of the, Clint Eastwood, yeah, made the putrid comment that he was giving the award, and it was obviously a referral back to Sasheen, was given the award for all of the cowboys that had ever been shot in some producer's Western movies. It was just a really degrading comment that he made, representative of a lot of the degrading comments. And we've just watched a whole series of events happen with a black woman who's just, I mean, if you've watched any of the interviews with her in the Senate, very bright, very genuine, and highly, highly integritous woman. And you watched how the racist comments are made and things are twisted, everything that she's done in her life, which, you know, if you look at official statistics and if you look at the legal profession and how they rate her, I mean, she's just A1. She's impeccable. And yet, unfortunately, unlike what happened in 1973 at the Oscars, 6 guards were there to restrain John Wayne from attacking her. There was no one to restrain these putrid voices in the Senate that just did everything they did to twist her record. And I found it interesting. There's a line in A Course in Miracles that says, we oftentimes ask questions not because we're asking a question, but because we're giving an answer looking for agreement. And if you listen to any of these sisters that are playing the race card, they weren't really asking questions. They were testifying. They literally were testifying under the guise of asking her questions and just feeding the hate base of that faction of this culture. The same ones who booed are the same people who, when young black children were going into schools to be integrated, spit on those children and, you know, refused to allow them entry into the schools or did the best they could. And the same ones that are still there who really came down on this young woman whose legal credentials are impeccable. And it's just a mindset that, you know, people who are in pain inflict pain on others. And it's a mindset that we need to heal. You know, when they said to Yeshua, how do we get to be humans? What's most important? He didn't say love your neighbor, love creator, love God or as yourself. He didn't say that. He said there's a condition in the frontal lobes of your brain. There's a mindset you need to maintain that allows you to be human. In essence, that's the bottom line of his Aramaic statement. And when you watch people in their hate and their rage and their lies and their defrauding and their subtle ways of twisting things, that's the mindset of hostility and fear that Yeshua's work was all about defeating. And it's time for us to wake up to who we are and to bring healing to that mindset. You know, hurting people hurt people. And so when people are doing that, you know what their power person did there. You know there's a great deal of stress, and you know exactly what their power person did there. You should listen to one of those who talked to Ketanji Brown Jackson in a degrading way about her record and tried to twist it to make it look like she did something wrong. Here's what I guarantee happened to them in childhood. They had a person who twisted everything they did and tried to make that person believe they were wrong and bad and evil. And here they are doing to this young lady exactly what was done to them. People like that need to be held accountable, and you know, sometimes, hopefully, some of that's going to end up in prison sentences, because we need to isolate people from the culture of humans. And Jeannie, we're all of a sudden getting a lot of noise in the background. If you could hit a mute button,
sweetie. Yeah, I was waiting for you to take a breath to tell you we have a hand up.
Yeah. Okay, I got it. If you can just give me a minute here. And so to recognize that there's pain, there's trauma, there's a power person dynamic there that needs to be embraced in conscious, active, present love, perhaps held accountable when one becomes legally threatening within the culture. You know, we have a system set up. There's a judge that I was one of my mentors, a man named Judge Asadi Kelly, who, while he sentenced thousands of people to life in prison, never punished any one of them. Everything that he did, he literally did with love in his mind and in his heart and his care for his community and protecting his community. And when he sentenced someone, he sentenced them, if someone was interested, to step into a healing process that I actually was part of developing called Laws of Living. And so to recognize that sometimes legal accountability is required in order to protect society, and that any action that's taken out of any form of hostility or fear is just going to replicate and pass on the power person dynamic. So lots of issues in the culture today, opportunities to learn forgiveness. Let's talk to our caller, sweetie.
I believe it's Roma 808. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm a little confused. I didn't get any email or anything about a meeting today for the Still Point group.
It's not for the Still Point group. The meeting today is for the Global Book Club.
Oh, I see. Okay, good. That's why there's no email.
That's what we'd be doing.
Yeah, we haven't done our second session yet. Do we have any idea when that may be?
We had decided we would wait since it's so close to time for the next breath work.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. I just was confused. Okay. Thank you very much.
Right. No, we're cool there.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Yeah, we made several attempts to put that together, and in one way or another, somebody wasn't available or didn't make it, and it just didn't unfold properly. So we will we'll move forward, and you know, when we know everybody is available, we'll add an additional session so we catch up on that one. Aloha. And if you're out there in listener land, our call-in number, 563-999-3581. If you push 1, that will put a hand up in the control panel. Jeannie will introduce you by area code, and we'll be having a conversation. So how can we support
we
you?
We have a hand.
Great.
So area code 610, I believe. It's Susan.
Hey. Hi.
Welcome, young lady.
Thanks. You gave me a mind shifter yesterday.
Aha.
Which is, whatever I do, I know the truth is my behavior is on track. I'm doing the right thing. You know, Michael, I don't know what to do with this because I don't have any words in there. I just don't feel that it's right or possible. I don't know what to do with it. I'm completely silent.
Well, here's what I do with that. You remember in the worksheet, we've got a place to talk about how you're feeling. And then there's a little box with a place to draw your feelings. With the art that you do, you might want to pick up and, you know, is there a way for you to artistically pen or with your cutouts or whatever you to artistically represent what it is that you're experiencing internally that is not verbal? And I suspect that what you're dealing with probably is a power person dynamic that happened before you had language. And so it may be something that, one, I would suggest you really pay attention to your breath as you think about that and process that or write that mind shifter and allow yourself to represent it in whatever way comes. It might be, you know, a color. It might be a shape. It might be a symbol. And let yourself be with that and ask Rukka to guide you into what is it that's moving here in me that I am not yet able to put into words, but I know it's not based in love. And keep writing that mind shifter. This would be an important one to set aside, you know, a period of 3 to 4 hours, turn off your phone, be in your own space, tell Tim, hey, I'm busy, I'm locking the office door, I'm going to hang with this, and just be with what moves and make sure that you pay attention to your breath because it's probably going back to some of the very core issues.
I can tell that it is, even you're saying those things. Yeah.
What's moving for you? What are you feeling right now?
I feel as if I'm in a box, a very dark little box with thick walls, and I'm in the fetus position. I'm just in a box, really in a box.
So you sound like you are processing an in utero experience prior to birth.
Holy mackerel.
I mean, if I listened to everything you just said, you just told us you were still in the womb.
Whoa.
And so that would be a place to breathe and let yourself, just let yourself be receptive and be aware. And, you know, when you start to touch into something like that and you do start to put it pen to paper and put it into words, it will probably feel like you're making it up. And so I'd start a sentence out like, here I am in this tight little space. I'm in the womb and my mother is, and just let your mind fill in whatever comes. And it'll probably feel like you're making it up. And the word might be my mother is in fear or terrified, or my mother's sad, or my mother's being beaten up, or my mother's considering suicide, you know, whatever comes, just let whatever words move in you and put them on the paper without censoring them. And my, you know, this is something that in our intuitive development workshop, we train people to do. And most people, when they first started, it's like, I'm just making this up. This is garbage. And then when they're, especially when they're working with a partner and their partner goes, oh my God, how did you know that about me? You know, you're not making it up. You know, it's accurate. And there may be, it sounds like something that there may be a lot of emotion to come with it. And I'd make sure that I keep my breath moving and let yourself just let that whole thing open up.
Wow, this is amazing. And it's a lot earlier than I thought. I thought the issues started around 2, but they didn't.
No, I think you just described exactly where they started, I would offer. That would be my take. And I would treat it as fact and let yourself process it the same as you would if it were intellectual knowledge that you could put into words. Let yourself put a color to it, you know, let yourself put a shape to it, that art that you do so gracefully that I often see posted. Let yourself do that and see what story comes out.
Okay.
And know that we'll be holding you in our hearts and in the space.
Thanks, Michael.
Gently caring for you to support the space of opening whatever this. I'm looking for a word, whatever this energetic dynamic is that has plagued you for so long. But doesn't yet seem to be able to come into words. You're right on the cusp of it, I'd offer.
Okay.
So I'd go into that fetal position. I'd go into allowing the breath to move and see what it is that moves.
Okay.
And you know, the forgiveness process involved here has, let's say, gee, this doesn't feel good, and what I'd like is to feel good, or I'd like to be cared for, or I'd like to be taken care of. Whatever comes as what it is that would bring relief, and you cancel that goal, you know, the outburst of energy that may happen may be a color, it may be a, as I say, a symbol, it may be a whole memory. It might be literally hearing words that mother was saying to herself, or that someone perhaps in abuse was saying to mother at that stage when you were 5 months in the womb. And you might ask, you know, in the process, invite mom, ask mom, is there anything that happened when I was in utero that I need to know about? And then listen for her voice. You heard the session, you were in the intensive when Magda touched into that thing,
mm-hmm,
with her,
yeah,
her grandfather. Let that voice come to you, and just let yourself be receptive, and rather than censoring it. And if it's all false, everything that comes is total fake and you just made it up, it won't matter, because you'll have processed the underlying energy behind it. And
so
most likely what you'll be doing is feel like you're making up a story, but it's going to be a true story. That when you just let the energy open and breathe into it, you're going to be free of. And as you're freed of it, everybody in your bloodline starts to be able to throw it off. It's almost like the sense I'm getting, and my physiology is doing this. It's kind of an unusual physical thing for me to do, but it's almost like a pair of bird wings just pushing, you know, my hands are just like wanting to push that energy off. Let it just be, you know, fluffed off. Let it be moved out of your structure for the whole family system.
That would be good.
Yeah, it would be. It would be awesome. And I wish I were there to put my hands on you and breathe you.
And I'd love that, because I think you could teach me how to do it, which I don't do by myself. Yeah.
Well, remember, you've got the energy field worksheets from the intensive. Maybe get Tim to just be there and be the space and ask him to go through. And he doesn't have to do every step in the energy field work perfectly, but you've got that instruction sheet. Ask him to hold the space and maybe do those energy points to the best of his ability. Again, it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be, your finger has to be within a 16th of an inch here. It's the holding the space and the physical support of moving through it. And if you do set that up with Tim, drop us a text or a note or a call and let us know when. And Jeannie and I will both be focused on holding the space for you.
Well, that's awfully nice of you. Thanks.
Of course. Of course. All right, young lady. Well, the show's about to cut us off, so we're in that space, holding that space for you right now. And know that you're cherished.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Jeannie.
All right. Blessings. Bye-bye.